So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
Live from TIAA Bankfield, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osher.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you, and we'll just have to come back next year and try again, Tony.
Ooh,
it's a refrain.
That's a rough one to listen to again.
It is. I hate the whole haters thing.
Yeah, the haters thing, and, you know, AJ with the we'll be back and better, and yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you're going to feel that way. We all felt that
way. Oh, I get it, but they're not.
Didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it was one that was a one-and-done kind of situation. John Osher here with us this morning. Good morning, John.
Here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a seven more and done situation.
Boy, and I was thinking this morning, it doesn't feel like you got half the season left somehow.
No.
You know, I mean, because it feels so much like the story's written. But here we are.
Right. We could play the whole mathematically.
Well, yeah.
Here's what
I
they could do. But realistically, they're not going anywhere this season.
No.
Season's done as far as that goes. You had to beat the Colts. You had to probably beat if you just won a couple of these five that you lost, it'd be a completely different story. But you didn't.
Sure.
We could sit there and say, what if, what might have happened. But the bottom line is they haven't played well enough. The defense in particular this past week. But plenty of the onus has been on the offense. I think it's been a team letdown, honestly, because the defense has had its games like Dallas and the Indianapolis first half, which buried them no matter how well they played in the second half. And we know the offense, you know, for a three-week period didn't put up a point in the first half. And, you know, they've been what they've been, and they take advantage from time to time of weaker defenses. So there's been plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah, what you needed, clearly, in retrospect, when you look back at it, the offense, be it injuries, be it whatever, after Kansas City went in a three-week funk, you would have hoped the way this thing was built that the defense could have gotten you through one of those with a just Herculean effort, and then you get back in these last two where you had a shot. One of those two fumbles doesn't happen. Maybe you get one of those and you're 5-4, but you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, and when teams go bad, which this team has gone bad, usually what happens is they figure out different ways to go back.
And that's it, right? There's no one thing that, like, what's the culprit? My wife asked me that. Why are the Jaguars not winning games?
And my wife always assumes I'm the culprit.
And I usually say John Osher is the reason they're not winning games. And I say, you know, look, she goes, is it Blake? I say, yeah, but it's not just Blake. It's Blake, and it's this, and it's this other thing, and the –
And your point is you can go down the checklist.
Yes, it is the wide receivers, right.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, that's the frustrating thing for me is that some people think it is they've figured out, they've diagnosed the issue. And if they only fixed this, if Blake had better protection, boom, we've had. If we had the health of Leonard Fournette all year, boom, that would have been enough for the offense to be rolling. And who knows, all these things in any individual game – could be the case, right? But they're, again, you've had the inconsistency of Blake. The wide receivers have been, you know, all over the map this year. The top three have each had 100-yard games for this team, and at times have looked really good. At other times, leave you scratching your head, Tony. Like, this is the group that they elected to go with.
Yeah, and look, it's like you said, it's not one thing, and that's the issue for, you know, trying to figure out week to week right now with this football team. Like, what do you try to plug up in the dam this week, you know, and you get Fournette back, and it was nice to see Fournette back in the offense, John, just because I really do. I think it settled everything down for Blake.
I think it settled everything down, gave him balance,
yeah. Right? Like, at least when it wasn't working, even when they weren't running successfully, they were still willing to run it again, and they didn't put it into a position where we're going to throw it 50 times because this didn't work like they did against Philadelphia. And I think that helps everything with their offense right now, but that doesn't mean it's fixed.
No.
Like, it's not like there were big plays coming out of the run game yet. 26 points, though, felt like an avalanche of points for this offense right now.
Well, I was trying to figure out, because it felt to me watching it like, boy, Fournette had an impact. And then you had 53 yards and whatever it was, 24 carries, and like, oh, well. But the backs as a whole, I think, had 182 total yards. Fournette had 109 of them with the passing game mixed
right.
in. Didn't it feel like that stat sort of told why the offense felt better? Because it's such a back-centric offense. They had 415 yards.
Yeah.
And Fournette had 109 of them. So the screen game hadn't worked at all until Fournette got back. So that was a big factor in it, is they were able to get some big plays out of that. I'm not saying it was an unbelievable offensive day, but I think because of his presence, it felt at least functional, which for three games, it didn't feel anything close to it.
I wonder, too, the screen game, you know, Blake talked about after the game a little bit. He said that they're a team, the Colts, that rarely play man. And they caught him in man on the play where he hit Dante Moncrief. He goes, after that, that was it, basically. They didn't get out of their zone all day. And I wonder if they weren't just saying, hey, you know what, we're going to stack the box, we're going to play everybody else kind of in a shell, and we'll let them have the short passing game and let them, you know, sure. dink and dunk their way down the field. Because, you know, somebody put a graphic out that showed Blake, the ball distance it traveled beyond the line of scrimmage. It totaled about 40 yards in this game. You know, you compare that to, like,
it might have all been the pass to Moncrief.
About 30 of them were in that
right.
pass to Moncrief.
Sure.
Right. And so the vast majority of them, the rest of it was all around the line of scrimmage. Now, great, you take what's given to you and all that, but it did seem like the Colts, particularly the way they got off to a start offensively, they felt like, we're going to get some chunk plays here, we're going to move the ball. If we don't let them do this again, in other words, go 80 yards in one snap, then we should be fine today. So I think that played into it a little bit as well.
Sure. And you make the argument that wouldn't have worked had he not had the fumble. So, I mean,
you're right. Oh, absolutely. Because
that was part of it, though.
Because the Correct. Defense played so much better in the second half. I mean, the defense did, it's a shame because you saw what they're capable of doing. I mean, they basically shut them down in the second half. Now, granted, you have 29 points on the board, too, and you got a 13-point lead at halftime, and the other team's not racing up and down the field on you in the second half.
Right.
There's a little bit less urgency to keep the foot to the floor, but what have you.
Well, and I think you also saw, look, this is a football team that we talked about the numbers for Blake in the red zone last year versus this year. When they got down in the red zone, they had a plan. Like, they had something they could rely on in Leonard Fournette. If nothing else, we can hand it to Leonard, and we have an idea of what to expect when we call that kind of play.
That was the biggest difference, Tony. And maybe I'm making too much of a big deal out of it, but the play-action pass that worked for the touchdown. It worked, it seemed, because, boy, there was a threat of Fournette running.
Right.
And all of a sudden it became an easy touchdown because the threat of him running pulled it in, and all of a sudden he was wide open for a touchdown. Would that have been as easy a conversion had it been a different running back?
Yeah.
All right.
Who knows?
We've got John here with us to the bottom of the hour. I know you've got some duties over at the stadium. Blake Bortles will speak at 11 o'clock,
right.
So we'll try to bring you some of that audio before the show is done today. The question of the day presented by Bud Light. We split it kind of into two ways. On Facebook, we left it open-ended for you, and it's the same question, essentially. Which first- or second-year player on the Jaguars is under the most pressure to perform over the final seven games of the season for their own career and what their importance is to the Jaguars? On Twitter, we made it a poll, and we felt the best four options were Taven Bryan, Keelan Cole, DJ Chark, and Dwan Smoot as first- or second-year guys that have a lot to show over these final seven games. So cast your vote there on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier as well. And on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, you can always call the program at 641-1010. Same number for the text line, which is driven by Duval Ford. We'll come back with John and we'll discuss those candidates. And are there any more that should be in that conversation as to what their future is yet to be written here in the final seven games of 2018 with these first- and second-year Jaguars playing for a role going forward with this franchise. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, John Osier here with you. It's Jaguars Today at 1010XL World Headquarters on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Malik Jackson, and you're listening to the only weekday show dedicated to your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Continue to be a leader, continue to just keep guys rallied up and focused. You know, anything can happen. You can win seven straight, but it's just all about your mindset, all about how you approach it. And not giving up, having that same enthusiasm and energy and practice and having that same mindset and focus coming into the building, starting with meetings. So it's just all about yourself being a pro, a true pro, and the true pro never gives up.
That was Unique Ngakoue yesterday. He joins the Midday Chalk every Tuesday right around 10 minutes after 12 o'clock here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. His mindset for the remaining seven games. John, got a question for you specifically from Aussie Jag on Twitter this morning. Can you deliver him some Chick-fil-A? One, no, that's not, but he is apparently pining for they don't have that down under, apparently, is my guess.
I could go for some Chick-fil-A. You want to go? Let's go.
I could. Do I want to go to Chick-fil-A or Australia?
Now. Chick-fil-A, let's just go.
Chick-fil-A. If the one down the street weren't being dug up, I might take you up on that.
Yeah.
They're doing the remodeling the lot or something like that. It's been closed for a little while. Anyway, here's the real question. How many games do you, John Osier, think the Jags will win now for the 2018 season?
Six.
Okay, so.
If they
light
it up.
Is that going to be enough to get them into the postseason?
Probably not. I mean, it.
Six,
I've been saying for
you
a
mean
couple
six
weeks.
Going forward? Or
six.
Total?
Six, period.
Oh,
I mean,
total.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I can't
see
them predict 6-1 coming out. But
right, when they're clearly going 7-0.
Right. I've been saying for a couple weeks, until they win, until they show they can do it, you can't sit here and predict a long run. So I can't pick them this week.
What kind of game do you think this will be with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Or do you think
I heard you on the way over. I think you have it pegged. I think it might be something like 41-31.
Yeah.
Something like that sort of game.
I said 37-24.
And now I think the Jaguars will score. So if the defense can come out, get a couple of stops, get a turnover, game-changing type play like they did a couple times against Pittsburgh last year, then I think they match up. I think they can play the Steelers tough, but they need to play like that, and they haven't got them enough this year.
A.J. Boye back at practice today, Tony. Is that the word?
A.J. Boye, I'm laughing because it feels like a conversation we were having getting ready for games in like 2016.
Sure.
Like if they can force a turnover.
It's a hell of a game to be a part of.
Right. Like if they can force a turnover, they can find a way to stick in this way. Like that's where we're at just a few months after going to the AFC Championship game and after handling this same team they're playing on Sunday twice last year. If they can get a turnover, they can hang with them.
It's like Hickens said this morning. He said, hey, at least they were competitive against the Colts. And Jeff said, that we should have moved beyond that, right?
Well,
we're just happy to be competitive.
Yeah, injury report is out. A.J. Boye expected to practice today, see some limited reps, so that's good news after he's missed the last couple of weeks. Quentin Meeks, Eliankou, and Josh Walker all expected not to practice today. Eric Flowers, who's dealing with that knee injury, is expected to practice but probably be limited. Laurente McCray with the hamstring injury, expected to practice but be limited. Telvin Smith and Deshaun Gibson also listed but expected to be out there today.
All right. Let's take a look at these candidates we put out here for pressure to perform going forward this year. I will grant you that typically a second-year player is under more pressure than a first-year player,
right,
simply because they've been here. The clock's been ticking on them longer. It's not like Taven Bryan's going anywhere,
right?
But still, to not have an offseason where the drumbeat is going to be, what a bust, what a wasted pick, mm-hmm, because that's how the fan base is feeling right now.
Sure.
And so let's start with him. You know, you've got a spot opened up on the defensive line. Not that he's a natural replacement for Dante Fowler, mm-hmm, Jr., but there are more reps to be had. Will we see more of him?
It didn't seem like we did yesterday.
Right, it didn't.
On Sunday. So until the team changes approach and says, oh, we're going to play a few guys more because they're young guys and need the work, I don't think you do that across the board. Teams typically don't. But you could see that with a couple of guys, and Taven would be a perfect possibility for that. And not so much pressure, but I didn't think he'd get many sacks. I thought he would have more plays of disruption. So absolutely there's pressure on him to do more of that and show more of that. There's not pressure, like you said, of any release, of anything, not having a role. But there's pressure on it. I would say there's a lot of pressure on Smoot. I don't know if he's going to live up to it because this guy wasn't in the lineup for the first eight games, wasn't active for the first eight games. He has to do something to be here next year at this point, you would think.
If not now, when? With Fowler gone, right?
Sure.
I mean, now's the time for DeJuan Smoot if you're going to take advantage of it.
That's what it is. He got, I think it was 15 reps last week, or I forget the number. I saw it.
Smoot got
McCray
eight
out.
On defense and three on special teams.
So. Okay. So,
I mean, I don't know if it's even fair to say there's pressure. I mean, I guess there's pressure on him. I think the odds are stacked incredibly against him to this point because I think that right there, eight snaps on defense.
Right.
With Fowler gone, with McCray not active, is telling.
Better in the last seven games to not go into training camp as a dark horse. I mean, he'll be in camp because he's a rookie.
On his rookie deal, right.
On the deal. But at this point, unless he shows something, he's a guy that you're going into camp assuming that he has to do something special to make the team. Keelan Cole, I would assume that he will get more opportunities moving forward if he can earn his way back to it. But I think he's a position where he has to earn his way back into good graces.
How difficult will that be? What did he have, 22 snaps this week?
And 22, yeah.
No targets in the passing game whatsoever.
Which is basically, that's 29% of the offensive snaps he was on the field.
Not a high mark.
How difficult? I think he'll have to catch the ball and not fumble. I think he'll get opportunities to do it. And if he catches the ball and doesn't fumble, then I think it will increase. I think the difficulty will be on him whether he performs or not.
Man, what do you make of – I mean, is he at the tipping point in his career here in terms of – like, here was a guy that anyone you talk to associated with the Jags in the offseason thought this guy was on the come, that he was a guy who was going to be maybe not the biggest name of the young receivers we had, but he was going to be the one that maybe makes the biggest leap forward in 2018. And now we're talking about a guy who's getting on the field for less than a third of the snaps, and this is not a distinguished wide receiver core.
Well – it made sense only because you saw a guy, I think it was 48 catches last year, 750-ish yards, three touchdowns. Coming from Kentucky Wesleyan, you figured there's no way. I didn't know if the numbers were going to match it, but the eye test you figured would match some sort of step up. He's got the speed to do it, and it just hasn't worked out. I mean, he's dropped too many passes and had – a gut-wrenching fumble that arguably cost him the Eagles game, certainly cost him a ton of momentum. I'm surprised because they liked him. I know Keenan McCardle liked him, likes his potential. Seven games.
Right, we saw that early on in the season. We saw the one-handed catch, 100-yard game against New England. I mean, it was off to a quick start.
And not just 100-yard catch, a really nice play to get the first touchdown, if you remember. And that's been it. You hate at this point of a guy's career to say that it's absolutely has to because, again, he's a guy you clearly bring back. There's no reason not to. Rookie free agent deal doesn't cost anything on the cap. So you would think he, much like Smoot, comes in, has to show these six or seven games that there's something or else the team has to make a dramatic move to make sure that they improve the position if he doesn't beat that other guy out.
Well, quick thought then on DJ Chark, because they did make that move to improve the position, right? When they drafted him, when you draft the guy in the second round, you're saying that's a guy who's going to be a future starter for us, and they felt like he was a first-round talent. How much pressure do you see in these final seven games?
Well, I guess I don't see that much pressure, mainly because I'm still looking at him in the lens of I like some things that he's done in terms of getting open in the last few weeks. I think except for the drop against Philly, I really like some plays that he made early. He still looks like he's confident. I think there's probably less pressure on him than the other three. And if not for the drop against Philly, which, again, you can't take the drop away, but if not for that, I'm not sure that there would be that much question on him going forward. I still think the arrow is pretty high, and I think the confidence is pretty high.
All right, I know you're getting out of here in a moment. Blake's talking in 30 minutes. What's the number one thing you want to hear from Blake today?
More in the locker room as a whole, you'd like to see guys taking on the role of, hey, we've got to get this done. I'm willing to step up and talk about it. Hadn't been enough of that lately.
All right. He is John Osier with Jaguars.com. He always steps up and gets it done here with us on Jaguars Today every Wednesday.
You're
on
a pro 10 radio XL. Guy.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, take what I said, segue me out of
just
here.
I'm segue, man.
I am working with
That's
a pro.
That's my superpower.
I am working
Segways.
With a pro.
That's what I got, John.
Guys, thank you.
Have a great week, man. We'll talk to you next week after the Jags demolish the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm thinking 73-2, Tony.
Let's do it.
And we only take that safety at the end to mock them, right? It's a self-imposed walk out of the back of the end zone deal. There he goes. Johnny O out the door. Phone lines are open to you at 641-1010. Which of those four that we just laid out is under the most pressure to perform and why? Let us know. Taven Bryan, DJ Chark, Keelan Cole, DeJuan Smoot, or is it somebody else we haven't discussed. And I'm not talking about a guy like Blake Bortles who's in his fifth year here. We're talking first and second year players, young guys on the Jags under pressure to perform. You can vote on our Twitter poll at MD_1010XL as well. Over 250 of you have done so since the top of the hour. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you live at 1010XL World Headquarters. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, far be it from me, Tony, to talk draft when this team is not eliminated from playoff contention yet, although probably sooner rather than later. But I am not talking draft here when I mention that Mel Kiper's top 25 big board now has two quarterback prospects in the top 25. Just in case there's a quarterback needy team out there that is ready to talk draft. In case.
You're saying we should be watching the ACC this weekend.
Well,
is that what you're trying to say?
According to Mel, Daniel Jones of Duke is now his second-ranked signal caller. And he's now his 18th overall prospect after Justin Herbert of Oregon went up to number four, fell to four, whatever. He's at four in his ranking. So I guess you could put this in the context of a couple of things for a hypothetical quarterback needy team. Okay, either A, there aren't many first-round valued quarterbacks out there, or B, might be able to get a quarterback we like in the second round this year. I don't know. I'm just saying. Not that, you know, if I were
we'll talk
about the draft, that may be an issue I would bring up for a quarterback needy team, but I am not going
to
do that.
No, and I would say that that conversation tends to change a lot over the course of that entire conversation from November up until April.
We're going to pick these guys apart,
and
you know, or the pundits will pick them apart, and they'll rise and fall, and on we'll go. Hey, we may get a glimpse, possibly, at Lamar Jackson this weekend in the starting role. Joe Flacco's got some kind of hip injury he's dealing with, although John Harbaugh said he doesn't have to practice to play. The possibility exists that he won't be available this week for Baltimore. And they could go with Lamar Jackson, or they could go with RG3, who's been inactive, and they could kind of skip Lamar Jackson, keep him in that role of, you know, kind of a gadget player that he's been to this point if they don't feel he's ready to take on the full game plan, what have you.
It'd be interesting to see what kind of decision they want to make.
I'd want to watch him.
No doubt. I know this because I was just looking at it. Just out of curiosity, I was looking at completion percentage around the league, right? When I was going to see how much playing the Jaguars had helped Andrew Luck's yards per attempt, and it hadn't changed it all that much. He did average like 9 yards an attempt basically this week. That got him up to like 6.6 on the season. He's among the worst in the league on that particular stat, but he's been efficient all season long. So then I was looking at completion percentage because Blake, you know, we have talked for, you know, the first 3 years of his career, if he could just ever be a 60% passer. Well, he's a 61.3% passer right now, which is 27th. In the National Football League.
Well, that's the thing, right? We talked about that last week, how with Sam Bradford being available, the numbers are so skewed now.
It's so different. And the two guys that are right behind him, right, the two guys, Joe Flacco at 61.2, and this one, Aaron Rodgers, completing 61.1% of his passes this year. Now, granted, Aaron Rodgers is doing it while he's throwing 17 touchdowns on one pick. So that feels
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that feels like he's throwing the ball away a lot. And I know I've heard some pundits talk about they've never seen Rodgers throw the ball away as much as he has this season. But those two guys right behind him, and then it's C.J. Beathard, Josh Rosen, and Sam Darnold.
Right. Keep it in mind, you know, for Rodgers, lost Jordy. Now, Jordy may not have much left in the tank, but at least he had a rapport with him. Geronimo Allison's been hurt most of the year. Randall Cobb's been hurt most of the year. So he's been dealing with Davante Adams and a bunch of rookies, and Jimmy Graham has given him nothing, basically, in the passing game.
And with that, he's completing 61% of his passes for 7.7 yards an attempt, which is still crazy.
Yeah, right, considering how many incompletions that he's got there. So he's
making
big plays. That's
13th in the league yards per attempt.
Right, and with all those incompletions that you'd expect it to be lower than that. So that means when he is connecting, he's making some big plays, no question about it. So, hey, must be nice. You know, we live in this reality, unfortunately, however. And, you know, look, again, Blake, nothing wrong with the game he played this week against Indy, right? I mean, that's kind of how you're going to have Blake play to protect the football and get it into the hands of the guys that you hope can make some plays with it pretty quickly. He hit Moncrief down the field with that one strike. But, you know, that is the difference between – not the only difference, but one of the differences between this passing offense and some of the high-powered ones you see out there. When teams throw for 320, you see the ball in the air. You know, you see quarterbacks finding guys 20, 30 yards downfield and picking up the chunks that way. I think to rely on yards after catch to the degree that they did this week is not going to be very sustainable.
No, and look, it's a conversation that we've been having for a while now, right? Basically since the Patriots game, the Jets game a little bit there too. But since then, you know, we get people asking every week, do they have downfield routes in this offense? Yes, they do. And I think Blake has been unwilling to pull the trigger on a lot of that stuff because it isn't what he thinks he's supposed to see, or he's getting flushed out of the pot. All these different things that are going on, I think Blake's been a little bit gun-shy about pulling the trigger on some of these downfield routes at times, and I think he probably was against Indianapolis on Sunday too. Now, he was efficient. You know, so there aren't these big complaints about the game that Blake Bortles had. We've talked about Leonard Fournette leaving five plays on the field yesterday
right.
when he had Logman in. That doesn't mean that Blake didn't leave any out there, too.
He absolutely could have, right.
You know, and it's the offense is not an explosive offense, and there's a lot of reasons why it's not explosive right now. It's not one thing. It's a bunch of different things.
You know, 320 is good, except if you left another 100 on the field, right?
Sure.
If you should have had 420 with basically a few simple adjustments. Now, I don't know that that's the case.
I don't either.
And, you know,
I know they've talked about it before. Like, we've heard Nate Hackett say before, yes, we had downfield stuff that was there.
Right.
I want to
play it. We didn't get to it, or,
yeah.
Right, it was open and we didn't see it, or
yeah.
Whatever. And I think it's really, Tony, more of that. I think it's more that he's not seeing it than he's not willing to take that shot.
That would be my guess, too.
Now, granted, you know, you may get in the mindset of take the safe, you know, can't turn it over. But usually those downfield shots are not the ones you are as concerned about getting intercepted. It's when he throws the ball out in the flats a lot, right? It's within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Sure.
I would bet that most of Blake's trouble has occurred. And, you know, certainly you're going to throw a few going down the field, but I don't know if that is a product of him not being willing to pull the trigger as much as it is him just not recognizing what's there at times. And that's
hard
a tough
say.
One for me right,
yeah.
to determine. Somebody, you know, in replying to the question of the day, talking about young guys under pressure over the final seven games of the season. Well, they said, in my opinion, and then they listed a whole bunch of guys who should be put on notice, including Cam Robinson. Well, Cam's out for the year. I don't know what kind of rehab better. I don't know what kind
right.
of notice
yeah.
you're going to put on. There's nothing Cam can do over the final seven games of the season to change his fate one way or the other than properly rehab his torn ACL. But they did list Fournette as a guy on there, Tony. We didn't list him because I don't think there's any question about his place in the Jaguars universe right now, right?
No, and I think we took a pretty good gauge of the temperature from the fan base on Fournette last week.
Sure.
Right? Like, I
mean, look, you might think he's under the most pressure,
sure.
and you're welcome to reply with that kind of answer. And in terms of the weight he carries on his shoulders compared to other first- or second-year players.
No doubt.
No question that he's got that kind of pressure on him. But he doesn't have the same kind of pressure as DeJuan Smoot, who is probably playing for his Jaguars career between now and the start of next season in September, right? He's going to have to show something because he's shown absolutely nothing at this point in time. You talk to guys out of Jaguar practice, like, hey, yeah, we think Smoot's having a decent camp. He's a good player. It's got to show up on game day at some point. And I think reflected in the fact that they only got 8 defensive snaps, that tells you what they feel about him, that they don't anticipate it showing up at this point in time. I think he's just a body holding down a spot until proven otherwise.
Yeah, look, of the names that we're talking about there, it feels like only one of them, maybe Keelan Cole, but he's certainly going to be in camp with his team next year. And we'll see what else they do at wide receiver during the offseason that may put some pressure on him for a roster spot at that point. If it continues the way that it has for the last 4 weeks for him, that trend for him is not a good one, obviously. I still want to ask somebody if he was on the field for that snap or if Rashad Greene was basically playing his role.
Right.
On that last, like, I am curious about that, and I'll try to find that out. But I think you look at those other guys, it's not like Fournette's in any trouble of not being a Jaguar in 2019.
No.
Right? There is a level of expectation because of where he was drafted, what position he played, all these
and
different
that
things.
That brings a kind of pressure with
right.
it.
Right. It's a different kind of pressure. It feels like of the four guys we listed, if you're going to ask me about those four guys, DeJuan Smoot's the one that I circle and say, I'm not sure if there's any
future.
Like, what the chance yes. is for him of being on this roster right now in 2019. It feels small. And that's a third-round pick where it feels small 2 years later for him to be a part of the team moving forward.
But there's a different kind of pressure, and that is a pressure for him internally, right?
Sure.
But in terms of, like, the focus of the ire of the fan base, right? He's kind of an afterthought,
right? Oh, Fournette's
in
the middle of it.
Fournette or Taven Bryan as sure. well, because he was the first-round pick this year. And you look at this team now, and you look at so many areas that you feel like they could have added help that they opted not to. Now, look. Again, Taven Bryan, DJ Chark, all these young guys. Will Richardson, somewhat quiet or lost rookie seasons, depending on which one we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's been a lost rookie season for DJ Chark, but for the other guy, two I just mentioned, you know, one due to injury, one due to really lack of total impact, it kind of has been. You can't – I won't put it that way. You can do anything you like. I won't write off their entire career based on – what's basically been a half season as a rookie, right? Because we looked at Keelan Cole at this point last year. Nobody was going, oh, wow, jaw-dropping, right? I mean, he was just starting to come on at the midway point, and certainly we had seen some glimpses in the preseason. At least we had seen some of that big playmaking ability on display, and you wondered, could that translate when the regular season rolled around? So I think there was a different kind of pressure. There's the pressure to not be the daily topic of conversation about how you were just a miserable failure as a rookie if you're Taven Bryan. I mean, there's no pressure that he won't be on this football team whatsoever for 2019, but it's a different kind of external pressure, and you just hear about it, and the chirping will continue to ratchet up with him. So, yeah, I think Smoot in terms of his career going forward, but Keelan Cole in terms of being a guy that you were counting on this year,
no doubt,
tops the list easily, right, in terms of the impact you thought you were going to get out of this quartet of players. DJ Chark, you know, we debated who to put in the fourth spot. Should it be DJ Chark? We felt he was under more pressure than Ronnie Harrison. Ronnie Harrison's played pretty decently when he's played, and I think ultimately he's going to be in line to be a starter with this football team.
Only played like five snaps this week.
Didn't play much this week, right. But I think overall people are pretty – if there's one rookie you're going to point to outside of Logan Cook, right, and you're going to say probably Ronnie Harrison's the one that's caught your eye the most in a positive way this year.
And I think if you ask people right now, I would expect that Ronnie Harrison's going to be a starting safety at one of those spots next year.
Yeah, so do I. I think it's likely the strong safety position.
Feels that way right now, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It feels overwhelmingly like that. You know, as we look at Barry Church get beaten coverage, get run over. Now, Quentin Nelson's going to run over a lot of people in his career.
That's a safety trying to take on a guard.
Right. By the way, I know you know this by now. Yeah. The audio dub was dubbed in there by the dishonest Colts media. Their official team account tweeted out that you were talking about. You asked me yesterday, did you hear him screaming on that time he pancaked Barry Church? I said, no. And you said, no, you got to listen to the mic'd up. Well, they tweeted out a version where apparently he was screaming at some other point during the game, and they dubbed it in over that play.
Oh, that's weak.
It is weak.
That's weak, Colts.
Right? He's like, I don't know where that came from. I wasn't screaming during that play. I think that might have been me at another point in the game. So the Colts just mixed the audio on top of
come on.
Right? I mean, like, this is a franchise that has been accused in the past of pumping in crowd noise and other disingenuous stuff like that. You can't trust anything coming out of Indianapolis these days.
Come on.
Unbelievable. So, anyway, not the end of the world either way. All right, if you want to get in, 641-1010 is the way to do it on the phone lines or the text line. Driven by Duval Ford, the Twitter poll is up there in terms of first and second year players under pressure. You can also weigh in more extensively if you'd like on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Coming up here in a few minutes, we've got This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, as we'll continue to talk Jags here with you and look ahead a little bit to the matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up this Sunday as well at 1 p.m. With Tony Smith, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're live at 1010XL World Headquarters. Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, on This Date in Football History, the New York Jets were granted a franchise as the New York Titans. They became a charter member of the American Football League. That happened on this date back in 1959. November 14th, 1993, Miami Dolphins coach Don Shula recorded his NFL record 325th career victory as Miami beat Philadelphia 19-14. That included playoffs. That helped him surpass George Halas at the time at the top of the list. Shula, including postseason, finished with 347 victories. Halas with those 324. Bill Belichick at 285 in third place right now. Tom Landry at 270 and Curly Lambeau at 229 round out the field. Only nine coaches in NFL history have won 200 or more games. Where's Tom Coughlin, you ask? 182 victories all time, including a 68-60 mark as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 4-4 in the postseason. Tom Coughlin is 12th all time with those 182 victories. And as a footnote, Jack Del Rio is 48th all time with his 94 career victories as well. No word on where Gus Bradley, Mel Tucker, and others rank. The list only goes to 100 that I have in front of me. Famous birthdays for this date. Happy 48th to Dana Stubblefield. Dana Stubblefield was the 26th overall pick in the 1993 draft by the San Francisco 49ers. When won Associated Press Defensive Rookie of the Year, had 10.5 sacks in 93. The AP Defensive Player of the Year in 97 with a career best 15 sacks for Dana Stubblefield, a four-time Pro Bowler. Moving on, Lawyer Malloy, born in the state in 1973. Happy 45th to him. Was a second-round pick of the Patriots in 1996. Was a four-time Pro Bowler. Won only that first Super Bowl with New England. He was gone by 2003 when they won the second one. He's off to Buffalo. Spent 7 years with the Patriots, eight collectively with three other teams. And happy 29th to a guy we just saw this weekend play against the Jags, T.Y. Hilton, a third-round pick of the Colts in 2012. A four-time Pro Bowler, led the league with 1,448 yards in 2016. He's averaged 15.8 yards per reception in his career. Collectively, that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The NFL has made the decision to play this week's Monday Night Football game between the LA Rams and Kansas City Chiefs in Los Angeles. The game originally scheduled to be played in Mexico City at the Estadio Azteca, but the field conditions are miserably bad right now after a combination of soccer, concerts, and rain have chewed the field up. Adam Schefter reported yesterday that he had been told by players that they were considering sitting out the game if it was played in Mexico City as scheduled due to the field conditions. They don't have to worry about it anymore with it being moved back to L.A. New Orleans Saints left tackle Teron Armstead is expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks with a shoulder injury. Tampa Bay Buccaneers linebacker Lavonte David could miss some time while dealing with a sprained MCL. David played through the injury last Sunday against Washington. Bucs head coach Dirk Koetter also announced yesterday that the team will be sticking with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their starting quarterback this week, despite only scoring 3 points on Sunday. The Buffalo Bills have waived wide receiver Terrell Pryor after 2 weeks with the team, and hopefully this is the last time he gets mentioned until we are talking about where he's going to wind up in free agency. But soon, likely no longer to be Pittsburgh Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell did not report by the 4 p.m. deadline yesterday and will not be eligible to play this season.
Yeah, I've had many people hit me up since this whole thing really started to turn sour, and it became pretty clear that maybe, I don't know, as many as 6-7 weeks ago, that it was a distinct possibility that he was not going to play this year. You know, the Jags should go after Le'Veon Bell. They should trade for him at the trade deadline. This is not something that was ever going to happen, nor are they going to be, in the least, in my opinion, interested in him. I know there are other members of the media who think they should be and go out there and get Le'Veon Bell in free agency. Not going to happen. You're just not going to spend, let's say it's $15 million, and that may be on the low end of what he gets, because there's going to be some crazy team with a ton of cap space,
sure,
that offers him money. And whether he, you know, wants to go to just the highest bidder or he's looking for the best situation, let's say it was $15 million was the number. You're not going to bring him in here with Leonard Fournette. Then what are you going to do? You're just going to cut Carlos Hyde loose, I guess, right, save his $5 million, and then sure, throw away the fifth-round pick that you gave for him. I was a little surprised Jeff Logman downplayed the significance of a fifth-round pick like he did yesterday. I think right now, unless they got a better plan going forward to integrate Carlos Hyde more in this offense, it is a wasted fifth-round pick. I don't think when you can get – now, maybe they did it because they thought, hey, you know what, if we could sneak in a couple of wins here and we don't know when Fournette's coming back, we're going to need Carlos Hyde in the second half of the season. That's a pretty expensive insurance policy to me for – a guy who right now is just not getting any touches. He's not a factor whatsoever in this offense. And $5 million, 4.75 to be perfectly accurate, is what he's due next year. That's expensive for a backup running back in the National Football League. And you can talk all you like about how, you know, Leonard Fournette's on his, not on his big second contract. He's still not making chump change out there. And you've got cap issues, Tony, as much as any team in the National Football League right now.
Yeah, look, if you want to look at it, the dead cap numbers for Leonard Fournette going forward would be basically $9 million next year and about $4.5 million the year after that. But look, it's the idea of going after Le'Veon Bell, too, just doesn't make much sense. You're talking about spending, that would be, what, over $20 million at the running back position? That's nuts.
Not going to happen.
That's nuts. Like, it makes sense for Pittsburgh to draft a guy like James Conner to be behind the guy.
Right. Right?
Like, that makes sense. And then what's happening with Le'Veon Bell is happening, and James Conner's stepping in, and he's playing very, very well, obviously. That makes sense. But if you're going to have a guy like Bell on your roster, it's when you have a draft pick that's a middle-round draft pick, late-round draft pick, or undrafted guy that's the backup to that guy. You're not spending $20 million at the running back spot
to,
today's
to what?
NFL.
To bench the number four overall pick in the draft from 2017.
No.
Which would be how it would be.
And if you're going to ask me, do I think Le'Veon Bell is a better player than Leonard Fournette? Yes, I do.
Right.
I think he's better, but that doesn't mean the organization is in a position to go make that choice right now. It's not that simple.
Right. Do I think Kirk Cousins is better than Blake Bortles? Yes.
Yes.
The question you have to ask, would it be worth paying more than $30 million to find out exactly how much better per year, guaranteed, fully, because what did he get, 27, 28?
28.
28 guaranteed, yeah. Fully for the Vikings for 3 years. And as we said, that was a more attractive situation to go to overall for Kirk Cousins anyway, so you would have had to outbid him. I mean, you can look back now and say, well, clearly we'd rather have Kirk Cousins than Blake Bortles. That's fine. At what expense? Add another, let's say, $15 million to this year's salary cap, well, who are you getting rid of? Because you don't have $15 million. You know what I mean? You don't have that kind of space, and you never had that kind of space for the most part.
And maybe the people that were saying that they should make that trade are the same that told us that they should go trade for Carr, too, right? And we're fine with spending $40 million at the quarterback position for whatever modest upgrade Carr might have been, right? Like, it's whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear a couple on the text line. It's funny how perceptions can be this different in the span of 2 minutes. I think these came in at 10:51 and 10:52 a.m. Okay, we're talking about Smoot, right? And
yeah,
the fact that he basically hasn't done anything in a year and a half now, and he's healthy now, and he's not getting any snaps. Jeez, Smoot was injured most of the season and was a third round pick. He should be back next season. He's still on scholarship, basically. Allow him time to develop. How much? 3 years, 4 years, how much time do you get just because you're a third-round pick? It runs out. Third-round pick will bring you back for year two, Tony. I don't think Dwan Smoot's anywhere close to being guaranteed a roster spot. Now, that's one end. We're being too hard on Dwan Smoot. Very next one that comes in. Do you guys work at Sweet Pete's because you love to sugarcoat everything? Dwan Smoot is in T.J. Yeldon's position from last year. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Yeah.
On the sideline in street clothes most of the year because the coaches want him to be. Marone and Hackett are under the most pressure. How much can you expect from two Gus Bradley assistant coach holdovers? Since the topic today is players in their first and second year, I guess we're sugarcoating how those first and second year players, Doug Marone and Nate Hackett, are the culprits here. I mean, we're talking about a specific aspect of this team, young players that are underperforming or have a lot to prove in the second half of the season. We've basically said Dwan Smoot is in danger of having a very brief Jaguar career, but we're sugarcoating it. I don't know. People hear what they want to hear.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just the way it goes.
I guess we weren't cynical enough to ask the question, who all would you like to see fired?
Right.
I mean, that's not what we're asking today.
That's right.
You're welcome to
tell us who you'd like to see fired, and we're happy to discuss, as we said, almost any aspect of Jaguar football, because we're not going full-blown draft until they're out of it. There's plenty of months to talk about the draft, and
no doubt,
to the point where we're going to be sick of talking about the same material over and over again and how we found ourselves back in this conversation, this kind of draft conversation, just 1 year removed from the heights that they achieved in 2017. And there'll be plenty of time for that. But anyway, besides that, keep hitting us up with your widely varied opinions on the text line. Let's just leave it at that.
That text makes me want ice cream. I kind of do want ice cream now.
What, because we're soft serve? Is
Sweet
that
Sweet Pete's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Are they known for their ice cream or as much as their candy over
know.
There?
But I want some ice cream.
All right, Tony, can anybody hook Tony up with some ice cream? And that makes it all better,
yeah.
Right? You don't have to earn it around here. You just have to want it.
No chocolate. If
right?
you're bringing it, no chocolate.
Tony's a half a millennial yeah. these days. No chocolate.
No chocolate. Give me just vanilla.
You don't eat
fine.
Chocolate?
Vanilla's fine.
What's best, all-time best ice cream?
I'm telling you, my favorite is vanilla. It really is. I know that's as boring as it can
possibly
be.
I like vanilla ice cream. It's not the best, in my opinion.
But it's my favorite.
You could have one ice cream. You'd get vanilla.
Like today or for like the rest of my life?
Both.
Vanilla.
Vanilla.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to like a soft-serve vanilla cone is, sure, is yes. freaking amazing. But I don't know, man.
No, I'd have toppings and stuff with
that it. That Haagen-Dazs coconut caramel one
oh, I know.
Is ridiculous, brother.
But if you're asking me, I get to have one type of ice cream for the rest of my life, I don't know that I want something that busy.
It's
I can always add coconut to it.
No, you can't. You can only have plain vanilla.
Then I'll do it.
All right. Fine.
I'm fine with it.
All right. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the weekly injury report from our friends at JOI and see who's getting healthy and who's ailing right now. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jaguars Today live at 1010XL World Headquarters. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm told the speculation is Doug Marrone's favorite ice cream might be bologna flavor.
Oh, my goodness,
you
that's
think?
Disgusting.
Bad, like
bologna flavored ice cream. Oh my gosh.
I got hooked into a Chopped marathon last night.
Uh-huh.
You ever watch one of these deals?
Yeah.
Do you like Chopped?
I've
like
seen
Chopped.
It. Yeah.
You know, I do. They had like a Chopped, you know, tournament of champions where mm-hmm. everybody's really good. They'd all won it before. And then it weren't making ice cream, but somebody made, what did they make? It was some kind of turkey liver mousse.
Okay.
Something like that. And everyone was raving about it. Uh-uh. Not me, buddy.
Getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday, huh?
You know what? More for Tony. You could have, with your vanilla ice cream, you
can
have some
have
of that
turkey liver
mousse.
I want.
All you
all
like.
Right.
No, I like, I'm actually a freak. Like, I like liver, and like the turkey gizzards are like the best part of the meal.
Okay.
Honestly.
So why do you think you wouldn't like the mousse?
Because I don't, just certain things, man. You got to eat them in the right consistency.
Okay.
You know? Like, I can eat an apple. But I don't like eating an apple pie because I don't want my pie to be crunchy at all. I don't want chunks of things in my pie.
How
like
do you feel
that.
About applesauce?
Applesauce is fine.
Okay.
No chunks in it. Right? You just slap a little applesauce on your pork chop and go to town. So now you know a little bit more inside the business with our eating habits. All right. Let's welcome in Dr. John Von Thrawn with the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. Take a look at your week's injury report for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, JOI, is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute and the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Doc, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I'll weigh in. My choice is chocolate ice cream
with chocolate sauce.
Chocolate ice cream with chocolate sauce is your...
Absolutely.
All
the
right.
The chocolate, the better.
All right. We like it. We're just kind of dissecting on the break here with you the injury report for the Jags. And who's expected to play and what your tea leaf reading told us about some of these things. The fact that Tashaun Gipson, who has been walking around with a splint on his wrist, is expected to practice today is a good sign, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very good sign. I think that most likely indicates he probably had a sprain. If there was a broken bone or fracture involved, I doubt that he'd be practicing.
All right, so Eric Flowers, Laurente McCray, Telvin, A.J. Boye, looks like we may have him back because he's going to practice. And all those guys still on the injury report, but all practicing. Pretty good. If you're out there on Wednesday, unless you have a setback, that seems like you'll be able to go on Sunday afternoon.
Yes, that's a good indication. Just hopefully they won't, like you said, have any setbacks with soft tissue injuries and some of these muscle injuries. It's, you know, it's not that hard sometimes to re-injure that.
So. Right. All of a sudden, with Josh Walker not practicing, with listed as having foot and ankle issues, Eric Flowers' knee becomes a much more hot topic, particularly when we saw how good Pittsburgh's pass rush was playing just a week ago on Thursday.
Yeah, that that offensive line is kind of a revolving door, it seems like, with all the injuries they've had. And, you know, hopefully I don't think that the knee injury is that serious. I think that it sounds like he'll be able to get back.
The rest of them, though, did not have for the second week in a row. Now, I don't know if, with the exception of Linder, obviously, who's done for the year. But in terms of the guys who are starting. You have nobody else on the injury report this week. That's a good sign. That it had been prior to Linder's injury, at least for the other four out of five, trending in the right direction.
Yes, absolutely.
And, time. You know, with Linder, Linder's already had the surgery for him? Or
That's my understanding, that he underwent surgery either yesterday.
Which leads us to believe it's not like an ACL tear, because typically that's going to take a while to settle down, right? The swelling and that?
Yeah, usually with an ACL injury, you don't rush him off to the operating room because, like you said, you want to get the swelling and inflammation down that makes surgery go a little bit more smoothly and actually helps the recovery. You know, it's more likely probably a meniscal injury or maybe a cartilage, a hyaline cartilage injury that they're trying to address quickly and get that healing properly.
Yeah, I haven't been specific about exactly what the nature of it is, but enough to shut Linder down for the rest of the year. Overall, this year compared to others, I mean, last year was a ridiculous aberration, right, in terms of games missed, with the exception of losing Allen Robinson in the first game of the season. You didn't have many guys weekly in and out of the trainer's room. So maybe throwing last year out, Doc, how typical or atypical is this season in terms of the volume of injuries they've been dealing with?
Well, you know, I know, you know, obviously through the course of the year, all NFL teams have to deal with a lot of injuries. As far as the number, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a lot more than any other team. It just seems like it's in some critical positions. And so it's had, you know, pretty big impact on the Jags this year. Yeah, it's just been unfortunate with that.
It definitely has. All right. Well, you know, all we can do is try to keep what we've got as healthy as possible for another week and see what happens with them coming in. James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, expected to practice today, was in the concussion protocol coming out of that game. Is there a standard amount of time? Like, I understand you have to go through all the different procedures, the baseline testing to make sure, and everyone's going to react differently. But is there a standard amount of time that you look at and say, if you've got X, unless this is a really high-grade concussion, you should be fine to get back?
Well, as far as, you know, the exact number of days, no, there's no, you know, set, like it has to be 7 days or 10 days. It's more their symptoms and, you know, the initial injury and then what kind of symptoms they're continuing to have, how long they're having the symptoms. So
there you have it. All right. Well, it looks like from every indication up in Pittsburgh, he will be on the field this week, as he's played extremely well for the Steelers all season long. All right, Doc, you optimistic and we get some W's in the final seven games or what?
Sure hope so.
Yeah, don't we all? You know, well, the proof's in the pudding.
Right.
Or the chocolate ice cream with chocolate sauce, yeah, as the case may be. All right, Doc, John Von Thrawn, have a happy Thanksgiving if we don't see you before next Thursday.
All right, same to you guys.
All right, buddy.
Have a great week.
There you go. Dr. John Von Thrawn with JOI, Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll have a little Blake Bortles audio coming your way here shortly, as he just got off the podium just a few minutes ago, Tony, and we'll see what Blake has to say. I don't know what you can say at this point in time.
He had another one of those quotes today. I know that it was like he was asked, you know, he hadn't thrown an interception in three games. And I saw it tweeted out. The quote was, you know, you haven't thrown in three games. What's been different? And he said, throwing it to my team. Like Blake, every now and then he'll drop one of those on you at one of these press conferences. And it's like, that's why I like the guy. Like, you're reminded again, this is why I like him.
Like him as a guy.
Right. Like, and then you're forced to see whatever the roulette wheel of that's spinning for what you're going to get every week on Sunday from the guy. But I like him. And I wish it would work out for him here in Jacksonville. It just doesn't feel like it's trending that way.
Yeah. How surprised will you be if he's the opening day starter in 2019?
With free agency, it doesn't look like there's going to be much available to him. And in the draft, we don't even know where they're going to wind up being at this point. Honestly, at this point, I wouldn't be that surprised.
I'd be more surprised if he's not.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that's the way I would go. Even if they take a quarterback in the first round, history tells you in recent years, you're at least going to see some kind of bridge to most of those guys.
They didn't even start Blake right away.
No, they didn't.
Right, that was a top five pick.
And he was the third overall pick.
Now they got to a position where they were kind of forced to, with how badly the offense was working with Chad Henne. After they had that big lead against Philly and then blew that game. And
Mayfield wasn't thrown in there right away as the number one overall pick. Darnold was. Rosen was not this year. So, you know, it's been leaning more towards
– Mahomes had a whole year off, basically.
Right. He had a year off and it worked out very well, right? I mean, you just – every situation's different.
No doubt.
It's just a matter of you know, to me, you're $16.5 million on the hook for Blake if he's not here, right? It's not only it's only a few more million if he is here.
Yep.
And if he's not, you're going to have maybe no quarterback experience in that room from at least, you know, in terms of any kind of significant volume as to guys who've played meaningful football in the National Football League. I should have mentioned this. Meant to. I appreciate Aaron Zane Plumley on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Tipped me to this. I did not realize this was the exact day. Today's the eight-year anniversary of David Garrard hitting Mike Thomas with the Hail Mary pass to beat the Houston Texans. I meant to mention that in this date in football and then didn't have it all on the same page, and so I kind of let that slide by. But I remember clearly, Tony, that day, and I heard – boy, who was it I heard talking about? Maybe – who was – might have been Dan Hicken talking about John McClain, the Houston Chronicle writer, and how funny he is to listen to when the Texans are going poorly in the press. I mean, he will just rip them. They're the miserable, worst thing that ever, stupidest organization, this, that, and the other. But that particular day was a bunch of Houston media, not named John McClain, just having the heck of a time laughing at, oh, look at this clown show of a team that we're playing here. And it, almost like – it was weird because you don't – like we – I've been on the road with the Jags. You have as well plenty of times, dozens of times.
Yeah.
And you don't sit there in the press box and really root for your – maybe internally you're like, hey, I want them to win. It's the team I cover, and I think that's a natural thing. But you don't sit there in the press box and talk smack about the team. It has nothing to do with you.
No.
How does it reflect on you? And rare has there been as satisfying a moment for me – as a member of the press, as to when that ball was caught, because these guys were up out of their seats like, yep, that's it. Well, see you next time. And then Mike Thomas caught the ricochet off of Mercedes Lewis and ran it into the end zone, and bedlam ensued. And I mean, one of the most memorable finishes, obviously, of a Jaguar game
All
time. You know, it really was. And back in 2010, and you know, they say it often comes down to one play. Well, that time it absolutely came down
to
one play.
Yeah.
And, you know, this one this past week could have come down to one play. Now, I haven't confirmed this, but somebody on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, said they went back and just ran the replay, and it looked to him like the receivers were Rashad Green, Dante Moncrief, and Keelan Cole on that play.
Okay.
So Didi was not on the field when Rashad Green coughed the ball up against – the Colts this past week. So that's the case. Kind of odd at that point in time. I get it. Guys come out, get a blow. Didn't seem like any reason why Dede Westbrook could not have been on the field. I mean, you see teams going to two-minute drill and running the entire two-minute offense without substituting.
Sure.
And it wasn't even – I didn't think even in panic range in terms of the time that was left. There was plenty of time for them in the field position and able to execute things like that. All right, let's see. I think this one may have been – no, this one came in a few minutes ago. One more on the text line. The entire league is trending towards offense. Offense is exciting and puts butts in the seats, which we need badly. Why can't we stop this perpetual defensive mindset we've had for the last forever that is obviously not working? Can we unload some of our great defensive players, some good offensive players, and start the switch? We don't need that many defensive players. We need some excitement. Last year was awesome, but sadly, it didn't last. I would argue they haven't had a perpetual defensive mindset. I mean, the last couple of years, okay, they've signed a lot of high-profile defensive free agents. Go back to 2014, they drafted a quarterback, two wide receivers in the second round, and a center in the third round.
Sure.
Those were the first four picks, and they traded up to get two of those four picks. I mean, they tried to build the foundation here with some offensive keystones. Now, did they pick the right players? Well, certainly you can argue the quarterback, the one wide receiver, didn't get a second contract, talking about Allen Robinson. You know, regardless of how we felt about applying the franchise tag, Marquise Lee is hurt. Brandon Linder has been good. But it certainly looked like they were trying to build an offensive foundation early in – and really, you go back the year before that, Luke Jokel was the pick, right? So – I don't know if I can say this has been a perpetual defensive mindset. They've added some really good defensive pieces in the last couple of years, and where they ended up with the guy, if they had drafted a different quarterback on offense, maybe this you wouldn't feel like there's a perpetual defensive mindset. Now, I'm not saying any particular guy in that class. We've gone through the litany of quarterbacks that were available. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I mean, they drafted Leonard Fournette in the first round, top five pick last year. I don't know if that's a perpetual defensive mindset. You know, that's a keystone offensive piece. And you could talk about, well, running game, defense goes hand-in-hand. That's fine. Good football with good football can go hand-in-hand, right?
No, and are they supposed to look at what the pieces they thought they were going to have on defense and not try to play to that? I mean, that's where they were strong. It would be natural to try to play into that if you were looking at the options you had on this roster and, honestly, the guy that you were going to have playing quarterback. It made sense.
Trust me, I'd rather have a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
But you can't just say, let me go get one. I mean, you got to either develop one or get incredibly lucky in free agency when the rare one comes along and be the one who gets them, A, and then have them live up to that expectation,
sure.
B, which is really the examples of that historically in free agency are extremely slim.
They are.
As far as that goes. But don't get me wrong. Look, I'd rather have a true franchise QB that you felt like you'd go out and hang 35 on anybody in any given week, and you could take the ups and downs of a defense when you have that kind of a potent offense. I get that. That's what today's game is made for.
No doubt.
But I don't feel like this franchise has perpetually ignored the offensive side of the ball. They may have made some mistakes in their selections on that side. They just signed Andrew Norwell to the most expensive contract for a guard in the history of the National Football League. Their picks last year, they took Fournette, then they took Cam Robinson with the next pick. That's offense. So, you know, granted, they took Taven Bryan in the first round. They took a bunch of guys with an eye towards the future. This year, they happened to sign some defensive stalwarts in free agency that panned out, and I'm glad that they did. Last year, this team wouldn't have had any playoff visits in the last.
They drafted DJ Chark
long.
In the second round and said they thought he was a first-round value.
Yeah.
Whether they were right or wrong, like, that's all to be proven out, but I don't think it's because they're not taking swings at the offensive.
Yeah, and when you say, unless you just feel like defense is not that important in today's NFL, and you can make that argument to some degree, to say that we don't need that many players on defense, really, the first half of this game would lead me to believe otherwise. This week, even with all these guys, they're allowing 29 points and over 300 yards and a half. So the defense, I don't know how many defensive stalwarts you've got to spare right now because they're not all playing like stalwarts. Anyway, just an interesting one. We'll hear from Blake coming back on the other side. His morning press conference now moved to 11 o'clock on Wednesday, so we'll bring you some of the thoughts of the Jaguars' starting quarterback. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jaguars Today, live at 1010XL World Headquarters on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars Today coming down the home stretch here on this Wednesday. D-Rock will join us tomorrow, Tom McManus on Friday. Next week's Thanksgiving, Tony.
It is.
And that means it'll be a short week around these parts. We are offered the wonderful opportunity to come in on next Friday and do a program. I said, Tony will. If anyone, because it won't be me. No, the 1010XL management is very, very generous to give us Friday after Thanksgiving off. I say that in case they change their mind right now.
Right.
So we will not be here next Thursday.
You know, last year when the Jags were in the middle of a push and fighting for that AFC South crown.
Didn't want to take a day off.
We were still talking about, you know, maybe they can push themselves into the bye week. You know, like that was the conversation we were having around Thanksgiving last year. We might have been like, you know, if they asked me to come in on the Friday, you know, I'll work something out. Even with it being after Thanksgiving.
Right, because it was fun every day. Didn't want to miss the day.
I will gladly take my Friday after Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And, you know, look, it's not like we take days off during football season. That's kind of everybody takes Black Friday off to some degree. Not Blake Bortles, though. He'll be grinding. Get you ready for another victory, hopefully. That's the case. Here's Blake talking this morning on his mindset and the mindset of the team, really, for the rest of the season.
It's kind of what we've talked about, you know, really since the bye. I mean, you got to get one to get rolling. And, you know, we continue to let opportunities pass us by. And eventually we're going to have to change that and win a football game. And it's the only way to get hot and get a win streak going. So you got to start with one. And you know, no better week to start than this week.
No doubt. But, boy, just then you feel the you know, just the resignation, right? You got to start with one. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know what else you can say at this point. We've lost five in a row. We've basically compete away the season at this point in time.
Yeah, and it's not like I don't have an issue with, you know, Yannick Ngakoue, who joined him yesterday in the midday chalk, and asking him, but, you know, we still got seven games. Go try to win all seven games. Go 7-0 in these last – like, I don't have some issue with someone saying that, but I do think the reality is more what Blake said, right? It's like we – I don't want to talk about seven. Like, we got to find a way to win one.
Right.
We've lost five in a row. We got to find a way to win one, and then
right
we'll
now,
see what happens.
This week, exactly.
Right. We'll see what happens after that, but please, let's just find some way to win one game. Blake was also asked about, look, it's a big game. Anytime you play the Pittsburgh Steelers, it is a big game. The Steelers are red hot right now, and it's still big, Blake said, despite it not being in that 8 p.m. primetime slot on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a team we saw twice last year, obviously in the playoffs, both times at their place, and we're able to come out of there with a win. So it's a team that we're familiar with a bit as far as personnel and things they do. And I think it's an opportunity. I mean, it's a perfect game for us to get fired up. They're playing good. They're having a good year thus far, and it's a chance for us to get back on track and head to where we want to go.
All right, a couple more here from Blake Bortles. The Steelers game, he says, is one that is always very physical.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I think that was a big part of why we were able to have the success we did last year. To beat this team, you got to dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And, you know, that's a big part of what we're trying to do and what we're going to try to do on Sunday, because you got to be effective. And like you said, it's a physical game. And, you know, whoever wins that physical battle up front is probably going to come out winner of the game.
Maybe their most physical player on offense, they got back last week. Maybe he didn't play the most physical we've ever seen Leonard Fournette play. How much
right.
of that is rust? How much of that is the injury that's still bothering him a little bit? Who knows what the answers to those questions are? Maybe Leonard will let us know a little bit later on this week exactly what was going on with that. But Blake was asked about Leonard Fournette and his return last week.
I thought he did a good job. I thought, you know, we stuck with the run. You know, I know there wasn't, you know, as many big runs or anything like that, but I thought it kept them honest and made them do some different things and, you know, allowed us to kind of become and get back to the offense we want to be.
All right, let's jump ahead here to cut nine. A couple more here from Blake Bortles. Just want to hear what he had to say about this. Blake was asked this morning his thoughts on Keelan Cole's struggle so far.
Just going through a bit of adversity, and he'll fight his way out of it and be just fine. I mean, he's a second-year player. You know, we still got a lot of young guys in that room, and you know, he went through a little adversity and is fighting his way out of it, and he'll be just fine.
And he chuckles like it's a silly question or something. Oh, it's a second-year adversity. This is a guy that averaged nearly 18 yards a catch last year,
right,
who everybody in the organization said was going to be a huge breakout player. This is a guy who's supposed to be arguably your number one wide receiver, and he's just a young guy. I mean, look, that's how seasons disappear. You know, you're always going to have a few just young guys.
Sure.
You got to get better. Year one to year two is where you need to get better. That's where you need to take arguably your biggest leap forward in your career.
They certainly thought he would be.
Absolutely. So, just a few little struggles, he'll get it going. Will he? I mean, I've heard this, Tony, in various forms throughout the season. Just some miscommunication. We'll get that corrected. Won't happen again. Really? Really?
Still happening.
Right. Why did it happen? If it's that simple, he'll snap out of it. Really? Will he? Not everybody does. I mean, you know, that's why today you look at our poll, the question today presented by Bud Light on Twitter, nearly over 450 votes actually in which first or second year Jaguar is under the most pressure to perform over the final seven games of 2018. 48% say Keelan Cole. So far and away the number one choice. Number two was Taven Bryan at 30%. And then DJ Chark at 12%, DeJuan Smook at 10%. They're all under different kinds of pressure. I would say probably DJ Chark is bottom of that list in terms of pressure.
Right.
But Keelan Cole's got pressure to prove not that he belongs on a roster, but that he can be a frontline player for this football team, which they intended him to. They thought he would be. Yes, they added DJ Chark. Yes, they added Dante Moncrief, but they thought Westbrook and Cole were taking big steps forward this year.
No doubt, and I think Keelan's getting to a point in the 2018 season where he had the fumble, right, which cost him an opportunity late in the half against Philadelphia and put him down for the first time in that game with the subsequent drive by the Eagles. And then this week, he didn't even get looked at. He's not in the stat book. He's not there. He didn't get targeted.
Right.
Like, it's – and I don't know how much of that is, you know, you hear Blake talking about, well, it's a second-year player, he's got to work through it, right? Like, that kind of thing – How much confidence does Blake Bortles have right now in Keelan Cole that when he drops back and that's where his read is going to take him on a play that he should let it go? Like, I don't know what the answer to that is, but last week he got 22 reps, and we had Loggeman in yesterday who said Keelan Cole was open a couple times, and like Blake saw it and just ignored
just
it.
Just looked away. Like, I'm not no interest that you're trying to interpret what you know is going through his head when he sees him and looks somewhere else.
I don't know, you know, what the answer to that is, but it feels that way watching what's happened for the last couple of weeks, and you can understand it a little bit. Keelan needs to make a play, and he needs to make a play soon to get himself back into the mix on this offense for this Jaguars team.
One last one here on the text line driven by Duval Ford. In general, they ask, how long do you need to see a quarterback play and evaluate him before feeling like he's a franchise quarterback? I think it's different for different guys, but I think it's usually pretty quick. I think you just kind of know. Like, you look at Patrick Mahomes, did you need to see – I mean, you haven't needed to see a full season. I'm pretty confident that Patrick Mahomes is a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, well,
put it this way, 4.5 years, plenty of time.
Right, like if the point of the question is, haven't they had long enough to figure it out? Yes, I agree. They've had long enough to figure it out with Blake Bortles.
Right.
More than enough time.
Right. All right, let's check in with the Midday Chalk.
Now, it's the 2-Minute Drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Get your Gator Game Day tailgate catering delivered to your tailgate every home Florida Gator game. Visit MoesCateringFL.com to order.
All right, Lauren Rue is here to represent the Midday Chalk.
A Wednesday surprise visit from my friends.
Well, you know, you don't have many. We thought we'd surprise you.
So excited for
Happy
you guys.
Birthday to you.
Thank you.
Whenever it happens to be.
April 27th, mark it down.
You can consider this your gift
for friends. Early. You're going to have to know this, Mike. You need to put that in your phone and your calendar.
I will. You'll be the first thing in my calendar.
Perfect.
If I ever do put it in there. All right. It's the changing face of what's going on down there. Wednesdays and Thursdays now, you'll get a chance to see
all right,
us.
So, very good.
You know, no more surprise visits. We'll just be here. You want to talk about anything other than Jaguar football, please?
Sure. What else is there to talk about? The Steelers? Should we talk about the Steelers instead?
I suppose that's semi-related, but we can. No Le'Veon Bell.
Doesn't matter, though.
Le'Veon Bell had showed up yesterday, he wasn't going to play this week anyway.
No, that's
so
right.
Doesn't matter.
It is tough, though. I mean, this is not where anyone expected this team to be. This is not probably what you all had planned to be discussing on November the... I think my watch is off. Is it the 13th or
14th? It's the 14th.
Okay, it is right then. I hadn't worn this watch since daylight savings and all the things, and so I have no idea what time it is. But, nobody expected to be at 3-6 and 5 in a row and every day trying to figure out why and what and how does it fix and locker room stuff and tweeting stuff and Instagram and... And do they hate each other? Do they like each other? All of this goes away if they just started to win. And I don't even know if one win fixes it because...
I don't... You know, it may put a Band-Aid on it.
Right,
but honestly, I think, and whether... Not every fan feels this way, but the squeaky wheels are the ones who talk.
Right.
Or the people who are upset are the ones you hear from more. I think if you pulled those, they would rather the Jags lose all the remaining games than win like three of them. Not all of them. Now, it wouldn't be universal because there are people that say, hey, look, I want to just have a good game day. I want to have fun.
Right.
Walk
because
out there
of
with
draft
a W.
Position, that's
that,
there,
there's
playing.
At least that portion of the fan base that turns its attention to, well, this year's done. What can we do for next year?
Am I crazy?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We all kind of knew it anyway. To think that this game is going to be closer than the blowout that a lot of the fans think that it's going to be?
I think it's going to be high scoring on both sides, but I still think Pittsburgh's going to win it by a couple of scores.
This to me, for whatever reason, maybe because I haven't been here long enough, and so for me, the fact that the Jags are going through this rough time doesn't have the emotional effect it has on some of the other people who've paid such close attention to this team, but wouldn't it be so Jaguar-esque for them to win this game on Sunday
would
afternoon?
Be stunned.
When they aren't expected to, when people have counted them out, and then go up and lose at Buffalo the next week.
Oh God, you know.
But I mean, would it make sense?
Some would call that the most Jaguar thing ever.
That's
some
what I mean.
Would, yes,
and I don't know if that's a fair reason, but I just because they have shown signs of greatness, and because losing six in a row just sounds so.
And I do think this team, the Steelers, bring something out in them. They enjoyed that kind of head-to-head that they had over them last year.
And it would make total sense for them It would make no sense. Let me back that. It would make no sense for them to win this game on Sunday, and that, for whatever reasons, makes me believe it's going to be closer.
I do think it's going to be a competitive game. I don't think the Steelers are going to run and hide in this game. I think the Jags will have some success. But, I mean, I'm worried about the pass rush we saw out of the Steelers last Thursday against Carolina.
Oh, no doubt.
It was devastating.
No, yeah.
And now without Linder, you don't know. Yeah. Right now Josh Walker's not practicing today,
right.
So you got a gimpy Eric Flowers maybe at left tackle. That's the area that concerns me.
No, there's no reason other than just craziness that they should win or be close.
Craziness? You've come to the right place. All right, Lauren Rue with the Midday Chalk. You got it. Rick Ballew and Leon Searcy coming up for the next 3 hours. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to Emmanuel E.T. Thalaran for producing, for Tony Smith, for John Osier, for Dr. John Von Thrawn of Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. We appreciate all of you listening today. I'm Mike Dempsey, back at it again tomorrow with D-Rock from ESPN joining us right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go to the...